welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. I'm here with two members of my fire family. I've got Scott.
Hey.
I've got Ash. Hello. And we have a special guest on tonight. We have Todd Bullard from Pender Island Fire Rescue. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time with us tonight. Why don't we get you to do a little introduction on yourself, how you kind of started in the fire service, and kind of where you're at today.
Perfect. Well, again, thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. Love what you guys are doing. My life started in the fire service when I was 18. I joined our local fire department. It was just down the street from where I lived in Souk, Otter Point Fire. Love the training, love the whole environment. But shortly after, I moved away. So I got a little taste of the emergency services, and just by luck, I stumbled across a gig as a rescue specialist and public safety diver with the Canadian Coast Guard hovercraft unit. And that's kind of where I really cut my teeth in the emergency services world. I loved the job. It was great. Working with lots of different agencies and different departments, sharing information, things like that. So at some point I had to make a kind of a work family decision, moved to Pender Island and got involved with the family business here. But emergency work was kind of always in my blood. So I couldn't hold out any longer. I joined Pender Island Fire Rescue in 2016 and, been here ever since. It's been a blast.
Awesome. So with the rescue specialist program, kind of what were some of your roles, for people who may not know what it is up here in Canada and BC, what were some of the roles that you guys did?
Yeah, so the way it works is there's actually quite a back history on it, but back in 2002, there was a fishing boat that capsized off of Steveston. There was a family on board this boat, seven people. And so when it capsized, they paged out Coast Guard hovercraft that had a dive team. They responded quite quickly, but the nature of capsized vessel diving means that in order to send a team inside an overturned vessel, you need a completely separate team on the surface ready to go as a backup. So kind of like a RIC thing in the fire service. And so at that time, they didn't have a full backup team available so that these guys could dive right away. So the long and the short of it, unfortunately, is that five family members passed away on that capsized vessel, and there was a really, you know, intense inquiry afterwards. And the fallout from that inquiry was to recommend that the Canadian Coast Guard increase their numbers and have five dive team members available 24/7 so that they could have a response to any capsized vessel, downed aircraft, submerged vehicle. And that change in policy led to this rapid hiring. And I just happened to stumble across the news that they were hiring divers. So I applied for that gig and learned along the way that diving was just part of the job as a rescue specialist. So the long answer to your question is that as a rescue specialist, they'll give you medical training, vessel operator training so you can take out your Zodiacs in rough weather, search training. And then with that is specific public safety dive training. So you kind of get this whole package of training that qualifies you as a rescue specialist. And the way that the response from Sea Island works, which is right next to the airport, is you cover a range of 50 nautical miles. So the cool part about that gig is you can be doing calls, you know, over to the Gulf Islands, or you could be doing calls like right into downtown Vancouver, anywhere where the Fraser River goes, Vancouver Harbor. So you get a real variety of calls, all kinds of different stuff. It was thrilling to say the least.
Yeah, I remember during my time working as a medic in Vancouver, numerous occasions we'd be sent down to meet the hovercraft for a deployment, and our guys would we'd board the vessel with you guys and get to do a trip somewhere cool, and it was, yeah, it was pretty neat. Other calls, we'd be down on a beach, we'd have to hike in, and you guys would come in the hovercraft, and it was always quite the spectacular event.
Yeah, it was a great gig, and like I said, you know,
I was just going to ask, so before that, obviously you had diving experience before you joined, because you said there was you saw it on the news or whatever, so you were a commercial diver beforehand?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, like, how it all shook out is, when I was in my early 20s, I was, you know, I was married, I had a young kid, and I was like, I need to get a grown-up job. So it's like, what do I want to do for a living? And because my dad was like a sport diving instructor, so I spent like every weekend at the beach while he was teaching classes. And then at the end of the class, I would dive everyone would come back with like 500 PSI left in their tank. So I would dive all these tanks on the shore, just in the shallows in the shore, and just spend out all these tanks. And so diving kind of seemed like second nature to me. So when I was trying to figure out what to do with my life, I thought, well, I'll go to commercial diving school. Like I know diving, so I'll go do that. And so I went to commercial diving school, and one of my first gigs right out of school was up on the fish farms and outside of Tofino. So I'd spent all this time doing like hard hat diving all these different, you know, systems, and it was all surf supply diving. So you got an umbilical pumping air down to you, and you're walking across the bottom to go do whatever job you're doing. So when I went to Tofino, it was kind of like, it was some, you know, blue collar work. You got a lot of dive time in, but it wasn't really like the type of diving that I'd been trained for. And, so they had a disease up there that was kind of working through the fish farms, and every couple of weeks, like a couple more people would get laid off. And eventually it was my turn. I got laid off, and a guy that I had gone to dive school with, we had done the dive training and remote submersible training together. Anyways, he had just come from the Coast Guard station looking for work, and he had mentioned to me that they were hiring divers. And for me, it was just another dive gig. I just needed the work. So I had no idea that it was rescue diving or anything, or even on a hovercraft. I just, at that point, was like, this sounds like a good steady gig. So that's kind of how I stumbled into it. It was by luck, really. Just a lucky day. The cool part with that diving is, yeah, they,
so when the,
sorry guys, the I was going to say, the cool part with that diving is because they wanted to get this dive team stood up so quickly, the pace was really intense. So they gave us 7 weeks to go from kind of zero public safety knowledge to full-blown diving. So I really liked the pace of the training. It was like super intense and, you know, long days, really physical, a lot of physical training in there, just trying to gel the group. They took two groups of 12, so they wanted to push us through as quickly as possible so that they could announce to the public that they had a solution in place. So yeah, I really enjoyed that part of it. It was great.
Yeah. Awesome. And then from there, you said you went back, kind of, you changed gears a little bit, went to, was it a family business until you got back into the fire service in, was it 2016?
Yeah, that's right. So I moved to Pender from Vancouver, and, you know, being a small community, the fire department knew, caught wind that I was here, and they asked me right off the bat, do you want to join? And I was kind of hesitant at first because I was, you know, finally home with the family more full time, and I'd been asked to come and take over the business. So I thought, you know, I better focus on the business for a little while before I get into any more trouble. So I held off for quite a bit joining the department. And actually, it wasn't until a couple years later, my kids were a bit older, and the deputy chief at that time had called me as a reference for another member. And he had, he asked me so many questions, like really thorough, thoughtful questions about, should we take this person on that use you as a reference? And I thought, man, you know, like he really spent the time selecting the people to join this department and his team. I thought, man, I want to get involved with that too. And, so that's when I joined. It was actually because he called me for a reference and I thought, these guys sound pretty switched on. I want to get involved. And basically, like I said earlier on, like I did the, you know, to get my 1001, it was spread out for over a year and, I loved every minute of it. It was just a great, great program. We had, people in my class from the neighboring islands. So we had a good sized class and it just, great facility, good training. I loved it. I was hooked right away. And like I said earlier, like my biggest regret was that right. I didn't join earlier, but kept my wife and kids happy. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Rather than running out in the middle of dinner and the pager goes off.
Yeah. Well, that came later. It was a soft sell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the training stuff, like what kind of, do you guys have a training facility or anything there, or is there one that you guys go to and use, or what's kind of your status on the island like?
Yeah, well, when I joined, I was the last class to kind of be sent off to go do our 1001 live fire training, and that was actually back at my home, my original home department, which was Otter Point Fire. So at that point they sent all the members away to train elsewhere. It was awesome for me to go back home, so to speak, and back to my original hall. And a couple of the guys that were there when I was there back in the day were still there, which was awesome. And, but that was the last class to do that. And the reason because is, for many years here, they had been developing a live fire facility. So the props were in place, the LPG dumpster, vehicle, fuel spill props were in place. And even the foundation for a burned building, was here. But they didn't have the funding to finish the facility. And actually, it was a grant from the OFC that it finished the facility for us. So for me, it's great. Like, I got in at the best time. We have a full training facility now and everything's brand new and shiny. So it's been running for a couple of years, but, it's a pretty nice setup for sure. So we don't have to go away anymore. We can do it all here on Pender, which is awesome.
Yeah. So we kind of done that here. We used to go away like up the valley for years. And then we started slowly making our burn building here and all that kind of stuff. We didn't really wait for it sounds like you guys waited for like almost like it to be perfect, whereas ours is more like we just kind of pieced ours together and mm-hmm. eventually we're like, yeah. And here we are.
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, we're definitely gonna build I think talk about the OFC grant. I think that's one thing we're looking at right now is making a more kind of more permanent burn building, because right now we're just using sea cans, but I think building a more permanent structure and gas lines and all that stuff in.
I know, like, I mean, there's two downsides. One, it's kind of fun going away for training. It's always nice to get away with the team. But same thing here. Like we had the sea can set up for quite a while, and I just remember, especially when this facility, it still uses the sea cans, but it's a three-story sea can set up and then a below grade concrete poured foundation. And man, like the first couple training nights we did in the finished building, you know, just kind of humping hose up the second and third story, that was a game changer for sure. Like going from a single story kind of straight shot in the sea can to going to third story, holy moly, man, like there's a lot of aghast firefighters that night for sure. I love it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty big game changer. We are lucky enough that our first rendition, if you will, of a burn building was a multi-level in time. It started out as a single level, and then you stacked it.
No, it was always two.
Okay, it was always two.
Just made it safer. We kind of didn't really know what we were doing for a while there, but yeah, I think we got it redialed now.
Yeah, so that one has been kind of like our mainstay, and then we added a massive search building out of Seacans that we can do live burns in as well, which is great. But yeah, like Scott's saying, our kind of final and newest one that is in the planning stages now will be a multi-level, just so you can add in that realism of it's not just a level entry walk in. Even just with a single floor upstairs, it's still a pretty easy attack to go and teach and drill with. But once you have two, three levels of stairwell, like you say, once you're getting the crews up and down there, it adds a whole new level of realism and just how I guess challenging it could be in more of a high rise or a multi-level apartment building, and just adds a whole new dynamic to training, which is great.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Like anytime you start kind of going beyond that first story, especially with new firefighters, you really see the kind of light bulb come on where they're advancing that hose up to the second story to do a search, and it's just kinked everywhere, like chasing those kinks up and down the stairwell is like its own workout. So I think it's nice to, it's a bit of an eye opener, but I think also it kind of gets them in the mindset, like this isn't an easy, it isn't as easy as just pulling some hose through the building. You got to think it through. A little bit more complexity of those layouts, I think, is really gets you thinking for sure.
Mm-hmm. And one thing we noticed with that, once we started running the burn building, and just the stress inoculation for the guys was, when we go to actual structure fires now, it's just, it's like they've seen the worst. Like we make training nights pretty hard, so they've seen that kind of the worst it can get, and then they go to a real structure fire, and they're like, oh, is that all we got to do?
So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, like when you look at those, like we have same thing, like a little entanglement maze here, and you look in that thing, it's like, 14-2 house wire and, rope rescue wire and Cat 5, you name it, like everything in the kitchen sink's crammed into that thing. So it's like, if you get out of that thing, everything else will seem pretty easy for sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like those mazes are the big equalizer. Like people you don't see coming, sometimes they'll just lose their mind in those things, right? Mm-hmm. So they definitely serve their purpose. But like sometimes I worry a little bit, like, man, did we just break that person in there or what? Right? We got to get them back.
We did a RIT course years ago, and I'm not going to name what the city it was, but it was this full-time city department, and we went there, we were training with them, and the instructor's like, okay, who wants to go on the entanglement maze first? And then one of the full-time guys like, I'll do it. Like, he wants to show up the volunteer guys. We're like, okay, he gets in there. He got hung up so bad, and he just started losing it. We're like, oh. And he came out of there, he was white, sweating.
Yeah, they tear the helmet off, the mask comes off, like drowning in there, right? So I had actually, like, on the same note, I had several dives in the Fraser River where, like, I don't know what it is about that river. It's just like full of stuff, like shopping carts, stolen bikes, like 1,000 miles of fishing line, you name it. And, you're just kind of wandering, like trying to get to your target, and it's just, you're just covered in the stuff, right? So it's like, and same thing, like a lot of guys, we would do a lot of entanglement training with diving, and it's a big equalizer, like even underwater, and like I said earlier, you've got unlimited air, so getting tangled and running out of air is almost impossible. But man, people turn real quick when they feel like they're all hung up for sure.
I think that's where Scott talked about, like, having the training centers and burn buildings and entanglement mazes in your department. It helps so much, just build that resiliency and being kind of physically and mentally prepared for that stuff. And it helps us as other leaders in the department as well, just knowing people's limits and their strong points. Mm-hmm. So being paid on call departments, you don't know who you're getting all the time. So it's really good to know everybody's limits for certain tasks as well.
Yeah,
I totally agree. And I love that phrase, stress inoculation. I like the idea of, you know, contemplating stress as something that you can introduce over time and, you know, in an increasing amount. I think like the old ways were kind of sink or swim, where it's like, I'm gonna put you in the worst case scenario, like on day one. And if you can hack it, then we'll finish off your training and wash out people, you know, that would have been done an excellent job if you just kind of pump the brakes a bit and just took it incrementally and give them, you know, expose them over time and give them a fighting chance, right? Where, you know, like I said, the old ways are like, you know, kind of sink or swim. And I don't think like we can afford to do that anymore either. So yeah, I like that concept for sure.
Yeah. Like, I think when Ash first started, I was training officer, but I wasn't like used to it yet. So I was following the old ways. And like, I think Ash's first day, he was on the RIT team in a burn building. And I'm like, and he comes out, he did good, but it was like, again, sink or swim. And then over time, we've changed the program so much. Now it's all about layering. Like, we layer everything and we layer, and then we add some stress inoculation, layer stress inoculation. And I think we're getting way better.
Oh, for sure we are. Yeah,
guys, and we used
way,
to,
way better yeah, firefighters yeah. out of that, right?
Yeah.
You know, looking back, like, mm-hmm. looking back at night one versus like what we do today, like it was, all right, here's 5 minutes of SCBA training. tonight we're doing a live fire scenario. So I want you to follow this team inside. I'm like, okay, this sounds good. Like, I was all jacked up and ready to rock, right?
Yeah.
So I go in and my nozzle man was like
bigger guy,
solid 250. And next thing I see one of like our inside techs walk up and he taps him on his shoulder. And I'm like, yeah, what's this guy all? Oh shit. Why is that guy falling down now? So now I'm in there. I've been a firefighter for about 10 minutes. And I'm like, what's up with this guy? He's like, well, I think he's having a jammer. I'm like, well, that's bad. He's like, so then the guy on the inside is like, what should we do? I'm like, well, we should get help in here, right? He's like, yep. Yeah. So that's called a mayday. So I'm learning on the fly. And I'm like, okay, like, let's get that happening. He's like, well, you have to do that. I'm like, how the fuck do I do that? Sure shit. So like, and he walked me through it and we got the firefighter out, me and one other firefighter. But that was night one. And I came out of that and like I drained my SCBA tank. I was wiped out. I'm like, this is insanity. Like, is this what happens here? Like, we get fires and guys start dying everywhere. Oh, no, that's not quite normal. I'm like, all right, sweet. But I mean, luckily, like, I'm not gonna die. I do enjoy like high stress things. But looking back, like, you know, we're all saying you can lose people that are kind of like on the fringe. There's people that like a little bit more methodical and they like to be able to understand better. Like, if they're not that progressive thinker and if they don't respond well in those moments, I mean, they may in time, but they're just not wired like that yet. They haven't had those life experiences that have given them the opportunity to think ahead, to kind of think, hey, everything's going for shit. What can we do? You know, they just haven't been afforded those opportunities in life yet, and that's okay. But eventually we have to get them there or they don't get there. And that's still okay. But we need to realize that a lot slower than night one.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, speaks to the way people learn too. Like, you've got to kind of put those things into chunks and then string it all together instead of being like, hey, you know, you got a mayday. What are you going to do? How are you going to call that in? How are you going to convert that harness? Which way are you going to get out of here? Like, you know, it's just too much to process in one go. And, you know, like we said earlier, it just doesn't set people up for success. And I get that too. Like even, you know, experienced people, like sometimes things go sideways, you know, not on night one, they go sideways on like year seven. And, you know, we just kind of revert to our training. And if it's not solid from day one, you know, you're setting yourself up for a big problem. And, you know, that kind of goes back to the SCBA maze. Like, I like the idea of incrementally putting people through there, but I also really get concerned when, if somebody has to tap out in the middle of the maze, I'm more than happy to take that pause, but I really want to get them back in there and kind of finish imprinting the right way to do that. And that's where I worry is like with time constraints on a training night, you know, you might make a mistake, and are you giving your members or yourself enough time to go back through and kind of model that the correct way before you go on to the next topic? And, you know, I think that's a big thing in the fire service nowadays. We got a lot to cover and not a lot of time, right? So definitely, you know, there's a lot of changing and growth going on in the way training is being delivered, which I think is awesome. I think we're learning.
I always tell our guys in our training section, I always tell the guys now, like the guys they have to win by the end of the night. Like they can't be all losses. Like they can lose for a minute, but then we have to help them to win again because they can't be leaving here going, oh man, like we're going to die. It's like, no. Like we're always going to win in training. You know, it might not look the best, but it's going to be a win in the end.
Yeah. Like I can kind of reference one of our most recent scenarios nights that we had. Like it was very intense. Like it was a major scenario, and because we're again paid on call, this isn't our job. We don't know who's coming. So obviously, like we have every Thursday is practice night, but I mean, some people have to work late. Some people get sick. Some people have this or that. So you're not always getting everybody. And like, you might not have your quote A team. You might have like a bunch of like really switched on rookies and a couple of the older guys and just this weird mix of people, but you still have to do the scenario because you just put so much time in it. And like, there's very valuable things that you can take out of this. So we run this scenario, and at the end of the night, it was a success. But kind of right in the middle, the meat and potatoes was a cluster. And there was many stumbling points, you know, throughout the night. And like major, you know, keys that you can pull out of there and take back. And I think like one of the major things is when you have these field training exercises, and then when everything's wrapped up, do an honest debrief with it. Like, I don't like to like beat the guys down, but also like, hey, like, where do you think that we failed today? And how do you think that we can get better? So let's learn from these mistakes that we just had tonight, and let's put that into play next time. So what we actually did the exact same scenario with different patient locations the following Thursday, and gave the opportunity. All right, guys, this is the same idea. Pieces of the puzzle are a little bit different. You aren't going to be able to go through the same door. Like, we've got multiple access points, so we blocked the one. The search had to be different. Patients were on the main or on the basement floor the first time. We had one of them was upstairs. So like, the scenario was the same in setup, but they had to use different skills to get the job done. And by week two, after doing that honest debrief on week one, giving the guys the opportunity to like really process what just happened that past week. I mean, people are generally the hardest on themselves. We don't need to beat them down. Like, they'll walk away and do that themselves. So end on a high note, like Scott says, make sure that we're not beating them down completely. However, like, hey guys, this is what kind of went wrong. Like, you can see it because we gave them the opportunity to tell us, what do you think went wrong? And they spoke about it. We're like, you're absolutely right. Also this and this, but here's some really good points. Now let's take that away. Next week, we'll be doing like 90% of the same scenario. Let's aim for success. Let's go. Let's do it quicker. Let's have less breakdowns, and let's be way, way better. And sure as shit, the next week came. It was about 25 minutes faster from the initial page out until all the patients were out and the fire was knocked, everything was way, way better. And people came away feeling much more confident with their skill set. And again, like, I don't see them making those same mistakes ever again, because they had that opportunity to really unpack that, sit on it, and then improve directly after. So, yeah, again, like, kind of the main point there is, like, don't train to failure, but train to failure. Allow your team to have those moments, because that sees, A, for us as instructors, what can we work on? But B, it shows the firefighter, if they know that they did something wrong, they will never do that again, and then provide the opportunity to come back and do it better.
Yeah,
that's an awesome example. And like, there's so many great things to unpack in there. And I think like one of the things I love is, or a couple of things you said that were right on the money, is like, most people, when they make a mistake, you know, when they're, unless they're brand new, most people that make a mistake, like, they'll catch it before anyone else. And so a lot of times, like, you don't really even have to take a pause to be like, hey, you forgot to check that door or this or that. Like, they're already 10 steps ahead of you, like, kicking themselves for making that mistake. And the other thing I really like, that's been a real interest of mine, like, right from Coast Guard Day, is how those great teams are created. And I love the idea. I mean, accountability is a big ownership. Accountability is a huge buzz thing, you know, last several years, but really having teams that, right from the start, it's like, if you want to be on this team, you have to be comfortable with doing those debriefs and comfortable with doing those kind of 360s with each other and being like, okay, where did we make the mistake? Let's take responsibility for that. Make those adjustments, go back and do it right the next time. And I like that. I love that idea of like, when you onboard your new members, is being like, this is how we do this here. We're gonna take responsibility for how we execute whatever mission it is, and we're gonna be honest with each other because we want to be better. And I like that idea of like creating that culture. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. A few years ago, we started doing some kind of operational debriefs after events and also training nights. And yeah, you nailed it. Like that. Just teaches the empowerment of kind of extreme ownership and taking ownership of something I could have done better. Yeah, there you go. You got Scott got the Jocko shirt on right now. It's extreme ownership, right? But, you know, and I've always said, like, we didn't have the best leadership many, many years ago when I was first into a lieutenant role. And a few of us were led to kind of learn that role by ourselves. And it was very challenging. And then as you grow and you network and you learn more, like, oh man, I was doing that wrong. There's mistakes being made. And I always said, like, if you can't identify that mistake, how are you going to learn and grow from it? So having that casual debrief in a circle setting with your core group of firefighters, like for a fire family, we need to be able to trust and say, hey man, you know what? I could have done this better and that better. I succeeded really well at this and this, and then move on. And that's how everybody pictures the roles and paints that picture of the fire scene or training scenario, and you learn from it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you nailed those two points. Like, I think it's great to see it coming top down. Like, you know, if you're running the call, like, I think it's really cool for those people that are, you know, working within your command structure to see you like take that ownership first and be like, hey, here's what I would have done differently next time. It shows that you're human to your crew, which they appreciate. And then the other thing is, like you said, move on, like unpack the problem, come up with that solution and move on to the next thing and don't sit in it for too long. Some people are kind of really hard on themselves. They just kind of, I call it sitting in your dirty diaper. Like, it's okay to sit in your dirty diaper for a little bit, but you got to change it. You got to change it out sooner or later, right?
Yeah. That's a great analogy.
No, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah. Actually, what we've just kind of been talking about, it kind of ties into a few of the things we talk about, like recruitment and retention and stuff. Basically everything we kind of talked about is, you know, keeping everybody active, knowing it's a safe group, and back to the training, having those wins in training and making them fun, like the high fidelity sims and scenarios we do. And just that stress inoculation gets people fired up and engaged. And I feel like since we've all kind of turned to that in our training and our departments, recruiting has gone up. I mean, there's a few years here where you guys have waiting lists.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Like, that's awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I agree. Like, I think, I mean, there's so many things to creating a culture that, you know, that people want to be part of. I think that's, to me, like, that's kind of the mission in my department is, like, you want to create something that people want to be part of that. You know, the same thing happened for me, like, when I got the phone call for the being a reference for another member, it's like the way this reference check came across, it was like, you know, so thoughtful and meticulous. I was like, this is a department that really takes a lot of time to consider who they want to be part of their team, and that's what made me want to be part of it, which is the ultimate recruiting tool, I guess. But you're right, like, engaging those members, making them feel like, and you've said that several times now, like making them feel like they're part of a family, which is anywhere else. Like when you talk like, you know, we're a family here in business, it's kind of like, it's a little bit laughed at, right? Like we're having a pizza party on Friday. Mm-hmm. You're all family. In the fire service, it really is that thing. Like we spend as much time with our brothers and sisters here as we do outside with our other family. So it's like, you want to create a culture where people feel like they're part of something special, you know? And I think you nailed it with that recruiting and retention part. Like when I first started looking at recruiting and retention, I really kind of had it backwards where we had lost a handful of members, had aged out. They're all kind of moving on to retirement. And so for me, like the goal was to kind of stop the bleeding. So it's like, okay, we got to get some new people in here and we got to build up the numbers as quickly as possible. But really, like in hindsight, now when I look at it, it's kind of upside down. Like if we focus on retention, those people that we retain are our greatest recruiters. I mean, you guys know that for sure. Like if you love being in the place, like you're going to tell everybody that will listen to you, right? Which is what happens, that you should join the fire department. So that's how I got recruited when I was 18. And the same thing took place here, you know, getting that fresh blood in and kind of reinvesting in our membership. It created this environment where people were like stoked to come to practice again and stoked to be part of these training weekends. And then all of a sudden, now we have 20 other recruiters. So, you know, like as a military term, it's like a force multiplier. It's like I train 20 other people, you know, to be stoked about being here and they're going to go find me 20 more other people. And so it really feeds upon itself, which is, you know, a really cool concept. And, you know, when you look at great teams, like there's all kinds of people out there spending big bucks trying to recreate the culture of the fire service. And so I feel like we're really lucky to have what we have, like a place that is, you know, people want to recreate in their workplace and they can't do it. So even with all the pizza parties on Fridays, they can't make it happen.
Yeah, I think sometimes the adversity helps. Like back to the pizza party guys, I don't think they have, like they don't have physical adversity most of the time. I don't think there's much in an office. They all have mental adversity, but really we got physical adversity. We have, like, you know, you're in kind of danger. So I think that helps on our end because people want to be part of that, right? Even though it sounds weird, you want to be part of a dangerous lifestyle, but yeah, everybody kind of wants to be.
Sure. I agree. I think especially there is definitely some, you know, some dark humor side to it where it's like in a small community, when you hear, like, you know, you hear the sirens, you're like, I wonder what's going on. And like, I think one of the cool parts is when you're in a community like that and you hear the sirens, like you don't have to wonder because you're actually part of what is actually going on. And for me, like And I've learned more about this, like, in my life, but I just hate being bored. Like, I just cannot stand it. So it's like, and I, when I'm talking about, you know, when I, some people, when you're talking to them about joining the fire department, you're like, it's almost kind of sometimes a hard sell, because there is a ton of exciting stuff. You're learning like some amazing skills. You're working with like a really switched on group of people. You know, they're all kind of working towards the same goals. And so you're kind of looking at people like, why would you not want to be part of that? Like, this is a no brainer, right? So I think that's the problem sometimes, is like on the outside looking in, you know, there are those people that are switched on and they're going to gravitate towards those kind of gigs. And then there's everyone else that's like, what are you doing? Like, you're crazy, right? So I guess it's two different camps. but I totally agree with the whole, you know, like there's I don't know if it's thrill seekers, like, and I've always thought that about myself. Like, I'm not really a thrill seeker. It's more, I just am like just really opposed to being bored, right? That's my motivation.
We notice that, like, we notice sometimes if we don't have a big call for a while, like, we're, you know, we start getting on each other's nerves. Oh, and yeah, we start nitpicking each other, and then suddenly a big structure fire comes in, or a big wildfire here, and then all of a sudden everybody's working together and all the training kicks in, and maybe it's not perfect, but it still kicks in and everybody does their thing, and then afterwards we're good again for several months. And then it gets, maybe have a slower spell again. It's like, ah. The chief's like, man, we need a big call.
I totally agree. Like, there's something about, like, you put a bunch of, and I mean, type A is kind of stereotypical. I think there's all kinds of different versions of that, but I think for the most part, most fire, you know, service people are somewhere in that realm of type A, and you put them, you know, lock them in a room somewhere, they get bored easily. So it's like, I know with my crews, like, if I see a little bit of like restlessness and like a little bit of like just kind of shitty attitude, because they're just caged up, it's like, you got to get out there and train and like get the, shake the dust off, and then and then hope for a good call to like get people back in the game. But that's kind of like my solution for a restless crew. If they're getting all curmudgeonly, it's like, you got to get out there and train, and like, you know, whatever it is, it's like nice and physical and sharpen the skills. It's like, you got to get out there and get after it. I had the same with Coast Guard. It's like, it was even worse because it was five of us kind of all caged up. There's two officers and five crew, and like, man, it's like summer camp when we got bored. Like, you just get into all kinds of ridiculous non-work related tasks because you're getting all squirrely. So you got to get that personality out there and put them to work. That's why we're here. And when we're not getting calls, it's like we get squirrely.
Yeah, you know, 100%. I think, you know, guys like us, like yourself there, where you have a good training facility, I think we are the lucky ones. That's not necessarily the case with some of these smaller, you know, maybe less funded, smaller communities where they don't have the opportunity to have these training facilities right in their own backyard. Like ours is just right across the airstrip here. We have a massive plot of land where we have multiple burn buildings. We have an AutoX pit. We've got, we've dug a big hole and flooded it and put a car in there so we can, you know, simulate that kind of stuff, right? So, I mean, we are crazy lucky to have what we have here. Mm-hmm. You guys are building, and it sounds like you built a really awesome training facility. So when things do get kind of pent up, we still have at least that to fall back on. And that can start to pull guys out of that funk. But,
yeah,
you know, I always think about like some of our neighboring departments who aren't so lucky. Like, one of them has a small smoke shed that you can go in and you got 5 feet to push, and then that's as far as it goes. And, you know, other places that have nothing. So they're out there stretching a hose and, all right, let's loop through the truck bay here with a charge hose line. All right, that's all I got. When they don't have the opportunity for maybe one live fire burn a year, because that's what their budget allows them to go out and externally train. and then they run maybe 15 calls a year, period. I mean, those are the guys for that whole retention side of it that like is really challenging. So, I mean, we're sitting here talking about retention and getting guys to come in and buy into the process. And I mean, we even get a little bit antsy and we're out there stretching the hose every week. I worry about those other communities, like how can we keep them engaged and like get them skilled up, you know, without blowing the budget because they don't have it.
Yeah.
And I think one thing we've done with our training ground, we open it up to them for free. Like we're like, hey, just come down. If you guys want to ever come down, just come down. Like we've had our mutual aid departments come down and they train and, you know, they get at least some live fire and, you know, we'll push them a little harder than even they thought they could, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's then they talk about it for months, right? So that's what we hope for because we want to keep them engaged. It might not be like because, you know, some of the departments here are only exterior. So they're, you know, they with the BC rules, right? So some of them are, well, we're exterior only. It's like, well, yeah, but we can still push you in and show you some stuff on the inside. Or like, okay. And it just at least to get some, hey, this is what we're looking at in the future. Or or maybe you push in, you know, 5 feet in your ground, make it safe. So they at least get that inoculation.
I totally agree. And like, there's no, I mean, you're right. Like it is easy to take for granted what you have in your home department. When you have a good setup like that, you kind of, oh yeah, we're going out to the building again or, you know, whatever it happens to be, like it gets old for everybody, but there's no substitute for like a great weekend of live fire training to, man, you like, we just had our neighboring island, main island, send a group over to finish their 1001. And those guys were like, you know, high five, and they had like carpal tunnel by the end of the weekend. They were so stoked from high five and every day, you know, they left so tight, you know, like you can't replace that. Like just that, the training alone in the building and then that camaraderie that it creates is like top notch. People pay for that, right? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, I feel for those other departments that are, you know, they're doing what they can with the budget and the materials they have. And sometimes, you know, like, especially like I was saying earlier, when you go to these training weekends and conventions and you get to talking with all these departments, you really see that variety of like, you know, there's the haves and the have nots and every fire department makes do. Like they'll find a way to kind of fulfill their obligation in the community. But man, some of those places, they got a tough go of it. And they don't have the equipment. They don't have the people. And I just feel for them. It's a tough fight to fight, you know? I feel lucky here for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to start to wrap up, I think. Is there anything else you want to talk about or bring up before we come to a close?
No, it was great chatting with you guys. I really appreciate it. And, you know, same, I feel totally similar with your guys' approach on training, ownership, leadership. I think this is what the fire service needs nowadays. It's really cool to see that happening. I love seeing what you guys are doing. And I just imagine that you're bringing up a whole new group of good firefighters. Appreciate that very much.
Yeah, well, thank you. We hope so. And I think so far we've really seen it in a lot of our new members and just the change that's occurred over the past few years in both our departments. So things seem to be working. Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that Scott always says, like Scott's our training officer. And he says the best reward is seeing these newer recruits after they've been in for 6 months or a year and a half. And then we've got a massive event and you watch somebody that came in that, you know, could barely put on a face piece. And now they're out there first on the nozzle on a massive structure fire. And they're out there kicking ass and doing everything that you've trained them to do. It's like that proud dad moment. You're like, yes. So it's really cool to see those new age firefighters coming up and, you know, being switched on and like taking all that training that you've just given them over the past year. And now they're out there and they're out there killing it.
I totally agree. It's like, it's so rewarding seeing, you know, like that switched on next generation, like you really got to hustle to keep up with how much they can take in and how quickly they can learn. I think, you know, when we're talking about engagement, like that's a ticket now. Like there's a whole group of people, a generation out there that like, they are fast learners and they're taking it in quick. And like, they're going to get bored if we don't keep them engaged and keep them challenged. And that's one of the big things we're facing now is like, they want more and we got to give it to them for sure.
Yeah.
I think there's a funny story about that quickly as we wrap up. So Scott and I have a bit of a reputation of maybe not quite ending training night when we should. We might run a little longer because we're out there, we're, you know, banging stuff off. We're just engaged, right? And
yeah.
I mean, we understand that people are giving up their evening and we really appreciate their level of dedication to be here for it. But on some of the nights when you're really trying to get that information across and like you're really hammering through something, sure, we're supposed to be back in the hall by 9:30 or whatever. And now it's 10 after 10 and it's getting late. The old guard would like actually give a shit and be like, you can't do that to the guys. Like they're going to quit. And now it's like, oh, like we're done. Like I could go again. Like, can we do one more rotation through? So like you nailed that, like seeing that next generation firefighter coming up, like they are so starved for information and learning. And, you know, like it's easy for us to just keep on pushing. And then you realize, holy shit, it's 10:30 and we've got 6 lengths of hose to wash and rack and SCBA bottles to fill. And like, this is getting late and like, we're getting old. So, you know, the next morning, Friday morning, like my staff already know, like Ash is going to be dog shit. So, you know, it's such a cool thing to see from like when I started, guys would get mad at us for being out there for, you know, 30 minutes extra, where now there's a group of people that we'll have wrapped up practice and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, our chief comes out and says, hey, I've got this new nozzle. I want, you know, like, let's find a moment to go and play with it. We're like, okay. And he sees us walk out and now it's 10:30 and, you know, we're out on the app floor and we're charging a hose line and like we're back out there playing again, right? Like you learn through play. So like that new age firefighter is such a cool thing to see.
Absolutely. And like my mentality on a Thursday night is, okay, I have this much time, so I like to keep the pace really high and hustle because I'm like, I've got a finite amount of time and I want to get the most amount of reps into this window. And we're going to keep doing this as quickly and safely as we can until we can get some good reps in. Cause it's like that, you know, what is part of stress? Like having a time constraint, right? So I always feel that stress of like, okay, I only get this much time to train. I need to make the absolute most out of that until we get back here next week. So yeah, I feel you for that one, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you again, Todd, for coming on, making the time tonight. Really appreciate it. Thank you for all the support and listening. And we'd love to have you on again in the future.
Awesome, guys. It was a pleasure. Thank you. Stay safe.
All right. Absolutely.
Thank you. Have a good night. All right. Well, thanks again for Todd coming on. It was great having him on. Great chat. We're just discussing earlier, you know, it's very interesting, the similarities to all the small town departments, whatever the staffing structure is, a lot of the same training ideas and scenarios and mindsets. So it's really,
there all seems to be a course just for small town departments. Like there should be like, this should diverge. Like, you're, okay, this is if you're in a city and this is if you're in a smaller community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like all of these courses, all of these, like everything is geared towards city ops. Okay. Like we go back to our command strategies and the tactics course or whatever, like everything you study NPA, you study the, you know, Title One, all these courses, like, again, like we're never getting that kind of a response. We're never going to be going through the motions of that. Like we don't always tag a hydrant every single time, right?
Yeah, so, it's always hydrant heavy, heavy, all this other stuff.
Very heavy. Like, we're lucky to tag one hydrant for the entire, you know, scene. And that's good.
And it's filling the tender.
And it's filling the tender. And then the tender's going to shuttle it, right? So, like, being able to do a lot of work with a single truck, with, you know, not an infinite amount of water, like actually having to think about.
Yeah, in the back of your mind, you're like, "Yeah, not underwater. I'm not underwater." Okay, so we have to figure out what's priority, what's important now.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into our shoutouts. Modus.
Ash. Modus. Yeah, claim to fame. Their snagger tool. They've got tons of other pieces of kit available for you.
And they're constantly making more stuff.
They are. And those guys are like, you give them an idea. And next thing you know.
You're getting messages. You want this thing? Oh, yeah, that looks cool.
Yeah, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? Yeah. Hey, is this what you were thinking? Sure. So, yeah, I mean, those guys, awesome team there. We've been working with them for a couple of years now. Like their whole mindset is making firefighters' lives better. So check them out on their social medias. We have some photos and videos up on our social medias. They will be on site for our seminar coming up in a week, which is crazy. We'll chat about that later. But yeah, if you like what you see there, discount code GTFF5. If you're at the seminar, there will be a special promo while you're here as well.
Awesome. Manscaped. Scott.
What do you shape your balls? You know, thank you for it.
You betcha.
Yeah, your balls. Thank you for it. Yeah, we were, you know, cancer is a big thing, so keeping it clean down there is important. They have the lawnmower 4.0,
yep.
The weed whacker 2.0, which is for the nasal area and the ears. What else do you? Any other orifices you put yours in?
The ear holes and that's about the holes in those, but yeah.
Yeah, so, and also on top of that, they have the lotions and the sprays
crop mops,
which is like a wipe.
Yeah.
Yeah, now they have a beard model. I don't have a beard, so it's kind of a, I guess firefighters don't really have beards, so.
Yeah,
they probably shouldn't. So there's not a lot of beard usage here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, check them out. DTFF20 gives you 20% off and free shipping. Anywhere in the world, I think.
That's what we believe. I can't hear somebody say, and free shipping, without hearing Marshall Bass in the back.
And of course, we got Stop the Bleed. Ash.
Stop it. Three main methods of bleeding control. You got direct pressure, wound packing, and tourniquet application. As we always say, if you're going to have a tourniquet, which you damn well should, you better make it a good one. Make sure it's out of the wrapper. Make sure you know how to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was just talking to some of our new guys on the ambulance the other day as well, and we were just bitching about ambulance bitching things. And one of those was, like, you know what, next time you're in a different station, look where the tourniquets are and look in the tourniquets in your kit. Bet you they're in the wrappers. Yeah. But you're not going to find that in my ambulance.
Yeah, and why would you want them out of the wrapper?
Because blood is slippery. Yeah, and those vacuum-packed seals suck as it is. So, So, keep it out.
Yeah.
You just use teeth.
No.
Yeah, it's the best.
Dirty blood. Yeah, exactly right. Wolf Tree Coffee. Scott.
Yeah, we have been working with Wolf Tree for a couple of months now. They've made a blend for, well, I guess, did we make the blend? I guess they made the blend. We chose the coffees to blend. So it's our initial attack blend, which is going to be on sale at the seminar and then possibly after that. Currently, they ship anywhere in the Okanagan, and they will be on site for the seminar.
Yeah,
absolutely. Check them out on Facebook, and they have a website, wolftreecoffee.com.
Yeah, great coffee. I absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. Fresh to ground and just so good.
Yeah,
drinking it again.
I literally picked this up on the way here to record tonight. Oh, it is phenomenal.
Yeah, so thanks to them again.
Absolutely.
Then Tanner Olson.
Yeah, Country Music West Coast Canada. Coming to play again at our seminar. We're definitely talking seminar heavy, but they're up here playing for us again next weekend, which is going to be great. Going to do a couple sets for us. Amazing music out of the West.
Definitely
the West
Coast. Weekend,
I guess it's a couple weeks away. So, check them out anywhere that you stream your music.
May as well jump right into the seminar discussion. Coming up.
Seminar 26. I don't know if we have to promote it much. If you haven't got your tickets yet, you're not getting in. Yeah. We are totally full. We've been having heated discussions with our seminar committee about how many more people we can let in, and we can let zero more people in because we are full right up, which is great news. We have 26 sessions. Everything's I was going to say everything's classroom. Nothing is classroom. Everything's hands-on.
Well, yours is classroom.
For yeah, classroom.
2 seconds.
Yeah, with some shooting. Yeah, there's going to be smoke and Todd's going to have blood and we're going to have fire. And, well, I'm not going to have fire. But yeah, it'll be entertaining. Chaos. Yep. Firepalooza.
Mm-hmm. Classic chaos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited. I mean, one thing, it's always fun being an instructor there during it.
Yeah.
But the shitty thing is then you don't get to see all the cool stuff going on all the time.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, just looking at the list here again, there's so many awesome events. Like, I mean, where do you begin, right? You got all the electrical emergency stuff, all the live fire, the auto acts, mass casualty, forcible entry. You know, like, there's just, it goes on and on and on, right? Like, yeah, it's...
I like watching our guys and people set up because we're trying to outdo each other, I think. Everybody's trying to out-cool their sessions because we want people to be like, no, that session was the coolest. No, your session was the coolest.
Yeah.
So I think we're all, like, the live fire guys have a little bit of head start on us right off the bat, but I think we can make ours.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then, of course, you have us. So listen to us on all your usual listening platforms if you're already listening to us. YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. Mm-hmm. And give us a like, give us a subscribe, follow, send us some messages and comments. We'll try and get back to you. And anybody who's interested in being a guest, of course, reach out. The only caveat is not to be weird. And thanks for supporting us.
Yeah, and be sure to follow over to our new Facebook account.
Yes, please. Thank you.
We are directing everybody over to that new account. Just kind of trying to go in a little bit different direction. It will encompass a whole new aspect,
which is Down to Fight Fire, not the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. So it's Down to Fight Fire, which covers us, covers the podcast, covers merch, covers training, covers everything.
Yeah,
yeah. And on that, as the dust settles here after seminar, we have a bit more free time. We're going to be working on a webpage for merch and stuff like that with our new design, which you'll see on the DTFF Down to Fight Fire Facebook site. And so hopefully we'll have that information out to everybody for shirt orders and other stuff.
Yeah, and not to launch before we get to, we're still too far away, but there will be an incentive to be on our new Facebook page as well. So watch for that for the incentive.
Right. Boom. All right. Scott.
Great.
Ash.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Stay safe. Stay DTFF.